stems from the desire to entertain and to tell stories. I come from an artistic background. Mostly music composition. I also wrote for theater, playwright. And one thing I noticed a lot, because I play a lot of games, like a lot of you, I'm sure, was that a lot of story-based games, RPGs, text adventures, is dialogue. And really, a lot of game-making, writing for games, is a lot like being a playwright. There's actually, I find something really magical about being able to construct an entire experience that the player interacts with so directly, like the electronic theater, that they're the main character. So, I've been working on games ever since I got my hands into BASIC back in middle school, when I authored Elf Quest. Yeah. It was somewhat underwhelming now. It was a text adventure with really, really bad ASCII. That despite its limitations, it has a password system, a soundtrack. It's really funny. And then my next attempt was a quiz game on photovoltaics, or solar power, in which an angry computer named Mondo, basically threatened to kill you unless, you know, you answer seventh grade science questions on solar power. But there's been a slew of projects over the years, a whole train of you know, good, bad, ugly projects that I've worked on. So really, it's been about 20 years. And during that time, I've been, I guess, a serious hobbyist. But I've really been excited over the past decade to see this new trend. So it's this big thing now. But there's a number of cheap or free, easy-to-use editors, and you can make all sorts of games, especially 2D games. And it's amazing how sophisticated and powerful and flexible the tools are now, and how easy they are to use compared to, you know, the old person card procedural-based, you know, construct an engine and base it from scratch, you know, get lamp, that kind of thing. It's kind of amazing. We're living in the future now. I never would have dreamt it. At the same time, you have this trend with the casual market exploding in a way that's staggering. So this whole new generation of players, like young people, women, and you don't have to be a gamer to play apps on Facebook or on your smartphone. And it's a pretty exciting time to be a gamer and a game maker, actually. The neat thing is that there are all these gaps opening up in the market because of this bullshit. So you have new customers to serve, basically. So you need new people to serve them. So there's been also kind of a rise in the indie market at the same time, which is pretty exciting, at least for me. And the nice thing about projects that are authored by small companies or individuals is, while sometimes they lack the eye candy aspect, the polish, the technical complexity of the behemoth companies, you know, your Bethesda's, your, you know, commercial releases, you still have this sense that there's this excitement where whole genres are being formed, that experiments are happening that, frankly, a lot of commercial houses are unwilling to take risks on. And, you know, some of them fizzle, but then you have your breakaway releases. So it's pretty exciting. Indie games are largely labors of love, but, you know, like I said, some of them do make a gazillion dollars. Well, not really. You know. But the nice thing about them is that they're born edition, the labors of love, and this. So anyway, getting back to what I said before, I mucked around with a lot of things. Really good ones, really bad ones, and, you know, everything in between. And today in my talk, I'm going to focus on what I consider to be my favorites, and the ones I found easiest to use. I wanted to focus on an introduction to game making, really. But hopefully, even if you have your feet wet, you might find something. So, There are more powerful engines than what I'm offering out there, with more features, bells, whistles, power. But I wanted to focus on things that were, you know, cheaper, free, and really, really easy to use. As a writer and musician, while I've learned to dabble with code in a limited capacity, and I've programmed from scratch, like I said, the old procedural stuff, I come from more of an artistic, creative background. And so I tend to deal with tools that shortcut the process for me, so I can get down to the fun part. And I prefer, so you're going to see like a bias here. I'm talking mostly about 2D game design today. The problem with 3D, as far as a game development standpoint, is it's really tough, especially with your first project, to be able to do it. And there's like a whole exponential increase in difficulty between being a 2D designer and being a 3D designer. And crappy 3D is awful. Where, you know, and so it's so hard that 90% of 3D is crappy. Especially, like I said, you have the giant houses putting out flawless things. It's really, really hard. But if you were a 3D developer, my hat off to you, because it's a tough thing. So anyway, I'm going to talk first about, kind of an interesting engine, and a lot of people haven't heard of this one. And I only really heard about it through looking for some resources for other engines. So this is Renpy, or RenPy, I should say. It's a visual novel engine. It's over 6 years old. Its website, because it has great web documentation, is www.renpy.org. And visual novels, if you're not familiar with them, are a genre that are largely text-based. So it's kind of, a lot of them are kind of game book-esque, like choose your own adventures, where you have the dialogue, and you've got like a character portrait, a background, and the player makes decisions during the course of gameplay, you know, that affect points, that affect the outcome. So it's pretty cool, actually. It's actually a very, visual novels, I like to actually mess around with this engine a lot, and not just make visual novels with it. The name, because it's kind of an unusual name with the, you know, with the apostrophe in there and everything, comes from a mixture of Renai and Python. Renai is the Japanese term for a dating sim, which is one extremely popular type of visual novel, both in Japan and here. And the Python, of course, is scripting language. The great thing is that it supports nearly all the features that a visual novel might reasonably be expected to have, including branching stories, saving loading of games, rollback to previous points of the stories, variety of scene transitions, and so on. So it's fantastic for making visual novels if that's your particular thing. The nice thing is that the syntax they use, the Python, is actually very simple and easy to learn. The program, the core code, is actually very well constructed. Everything's... Yeah. Everything is very easily... Sorry. Very simple, easy to learn. And the actual input of what you do, while it is technically... Well, this is a really... Yeah, see, here. This is really simple. If you're looking down here, it's very much like a script. So what they've done here to display text is they have this character key. That's the shortcut you can find in the initial block here, where they've done this same one typing. But you could just type the character's name and then put the text here in quotes. So it's very much like writing a script, which is really good if you have a game that has a lot of text, because it's really easy to import it. But the nice thing is that you can plop Python code in wherever you want. Just simple announcements. You can add advanced features, and it is completely interfaceable with Pygame. So if you have a friend who has something even if you're not fantastic at coding Python, if you have a friend who has something you can work out to deal with a mini game or do anything like that, or if you're really good at Python already, you're way ahead of the curve. And they have tools in there to obfuscate your scripts and archive your game assets to mitigate copyright infringement. And they're not dependent on any other software once you actually produce a game and run. So there's no need for your users to demo runtimes, drivers, codecs, or anything like that. And let's see. Okay. Just trying to make sure I get everything I want you guys to do. Okay, great. So it's very flexible. It's really easy to make sims in runtime, which is what I tend to use it for. With a very little bit of variable manipulation, which is really easy in Python, you can add a ton of gameplay value, you can do all sorts of sims. It plays movies and stuff, so you can do lots of things like there. And it's very good for text-heavy games. It's open source, and it's free, even for commercial use. And they have a ton of facts and cookbooks online that are really easy to use, understand, and pertinent. And, you know, it's authored in Python, so it supports Windows, Mac, Linux, and Android, which is, you know, a really big thing. So, the nice thing, too, is the community, at least in my experience, is super helpful. There's a large number of creators, but since they're still kind of niche, they're very passionate about it, and they're very willing to help other people, which I like. And, yeah, it's great. The problem with Runtime is that there are a few things. It comes with no graphical assets whatsoever. So all the art you need, you know, you've got to either make yourself or commission the art. The nice thing about it is that, you know, you don't have to undo a lot of the work, which in a lot of the more ready-made engines you run into the problem that things are too formatted, things are too, you know, specific. The specs are pretty forgiving, so you don't have to have things exact in one size, and you can do things in a number of resolutions. The other thing is that it takes a bit of variable manipulation and board coding to make games other than a visual novel, like I said. But the tutorials are good, and it's not really that bad. If you have no coding experience whatsoever, it can be a little tough to be your first engine, but then again, it's probably good to start somewhere. So, oh, the other thing is there's no default physics engine. So everything you do with an action component in Runtime has to be done with code. So it's very limited as to like what it can produce, but it's very good for next everything. Okay, so the next is probably the most popular casual game engine out there right now. And I'm sure 95% of you have heard of RPG Maker. And the thing about RPG Maker sometimes is that it's changed a lot the last few releases. I actually was very jaded about RPG Maker for a while. Because the first time I ever used it, it was a crack of the Japanese version that was very poorly done, it was full of bugs, a lot of it wasn't very customizable, it just didn't have a scripting language or anything. But as of now, the two most current versions, the only ones available legally in the US, are free 30-day trial, $60 after that. You can use it for commercial use after that. But RPG Maker XP, it came out, I think, 2003. It was the first RPG Maker release to use Ruby. And understandably, when they implemented the RGSS, this Ruby Game Scripting System, that's the acronym. So it's like a Ruby program. Once they did that, it upped the ability, it made it so you could script all manner of customizations to the game and opened the capabilities of the tool up to something that you could actually do quite a bit of stuff with. Let's see. Yes. So that was something that was a big deal to me. This is RPG Maker XP program I was just talking about. I popped it up there originally. So basically, if you haven't used RPG Maker before, they have a few different graphical placement systems here that are really, really easy to use. Maps are super easy to make. It's just all like dragon. So you can, oh, that's not fair. So you can just, you know, place objects on the map and make your map really quick and don't have to mess around too much with it. Of course, I'm messing around a lot right now. But, there we go. Alright, there we go. I have used RPG Maker, like, seriously, for about a year, so this is really fun, you guys need to watch me do this. But you can make a map, and it's a really crappy map. There you go. It comes with, the nice thing about it is you can do that. RPG Maker, in general, the two releases, they come with more than enough music and art to complete game. It's easy to use, it's easy, really easy to modify the databases. Like, everything that comes in here is just really simple to do. The problems with RPG Maker in general is that modifying the existing script can be really tricky, once you're experienced. But then again, there's a decent community out there. I find them less friendly than the Remedy community. And the other problem is, even between the two RPG Maker versions that are out there, the XP and the DX, there's a significant difference in the way that modifying scripts need to be written for the versions because the methods are all different. And I think they did a bad job in making it suit people from one to the other because it's pretty easy, especially if you're working in a couple different versions. The other problem is making anything other than an RPG takes a lot of monkeying around, a lot of undoing, either through events or scripting or some combination of both. RPG Maker is event-based, so it works on the system maps here where you click and a whole bunch of event commands show up and you kind of, it's neat because it's all visual, so if you're not much in coding blocks, it's pretty simple. So if you want to show text, you know, you show text here. If you want to show choices, you show choices here. It basically programs for you a little at a time. And you can do a lot of things here. Actually, the neat thing is, it take a long time to explain each program in depth, but essentially, it's kind of, rather than having to remember the syntax, you lay out the steps in order of what you want to accomplish within your script, and then it executes. So it's pretty neat that way, in that you at least don't have to worry about the detail orientation of the syntax, and that problem you find when you're running bugs. So you can either do a lot of things either through scripting or through events, which for people who aren't programmers sometimes are easy to work through because they're visual. And the neat thing is you start thinking like a programmer, so actual code becomes easier to deal with. Again, the problem with RPG Maker is there's no included physics engine for action games of any kind, and it would need to be scripted from scratch. So the differences between the two versions of RPG Maker XP and DX, XP named for Windows XP, it came out about the time that was, and VX is Vista and XP, so they released DX for Vista. But XP is extremely flexible in the way that it works. For example, let me show you something. Still like the sample game, so it's just like the default setting here, but they just start all the cool things. So this little guy, I hate the sprite, but this is the default hero they give you. Just like cruising around the map here. There are a whole bunch of character sprites, so you probably already character sprites before, but if you haven't, that's character sprite. Within the game, if you wanted to change the main character, you go to Actors tab, that's Alexis. I hate him. You could look through, there's all this art in here. Like I said, there's a lot of art. And it takes, there's a long discovery process when you go through and you see how many graphics they've included that you can use commercially. So you can see Alexis, he's, you know, he's that size. And quite a big monster. But how much bigger is a goblin guy is? So there's not a standard size that you have to use, which can be kind of a pain in the butt if you don't have a lot of different variations. Some of the programs are very specific just to the material set. And XD is really forgiving that way. So working with a sprite artist on an XD title is a lot easier if you're doing some custom sprites. So the downside to XD is it still requires an immense amount of attention to detail when you're working the event commands, because you can screw up anywhere in the process. You still have to remember, oh, when you're going to the inn, you're making an inn event to subtract the gold or to heal the party. Like, there are a certain number of steps. You have to tell it everything. Which, you know, as you're learning, you'll learn how to do that. So that's not too bad. But the thing about the sprites, as you can see, there's a high level of detail for 2D sprites on them. And they're really, really hard. If you're trying to sprite it yourself, I know this from experience, they can be very difficult to match the shading on them, and it's not an easy task. But that said, it's kind of a medicine ball. So if you can do the RPG Maker sprite, they're pretty detailed. And that particular template, unforgiving. So you'll end up being a pretty good spriter if you can master that. Okay, so the other version is RPG Maker VX. Again, free 30-day trial period, that's $60, use it commercially, you can sell games with it. Some of the differences, you can tell already, oh, one of my projects, okay. This is just a demo of the game I'm working on. This is the one I have done. But you can tell, like, the graphical style of the assets that come with the main game, so actually this is nice because you can actually see a project, is more of a chibi style, which is like a Japanese style of art where people look like children, they're very expressive, so that's one big difference. A nice thing about VX is they have a quick event creation. So there's lots of, especially in RPGs, there's a lot of tedious things like creating a place where you can go for a door, like warping around. And even when it's not hard, and it's really not that hard to screw up once you know what you're doing, it takes me a lot of time and it's really boring. So what they have here is they'll set up an event. So you say, oh, I want a treasure chest with 25 gold in it. You put it there, open it up, and instead of having to every single time put this whole this through, it does all this work for you. Which, you know, it's pretty easy to do, but it saves you a lot of time, and games take a lot of time, so you really don't want to do stuff like that. But if you want it to be a precise way, if you want a certain tone to play, like I had a problem on my project where the transfer steps up. Like when you leave the screen, it's just way too loud. And they didn't have a really easy way to do that, so I ended up having to adjust it manually. And then I figured out how to change the script, but. This is another good thing. So, they have, get a new map here. Yeah, so I'm gonna create a new map. Yeah, whatever, we're done. Okay, so, and this is another really lazy thing, but lazy things save time, which means you'll get your project done. So they actually have a dungeon generator. Oh, I gotta make the map bigger, so fun. Let's see, what do we want? We want all 35 by 30. Why not? Okay. So, gonna generate just a plain old dungeon. Oh, what do we want to make it look like? Let's make it look all grassy. It's spring. Okay, yeah, so I'll pull out here. But, you know, it's not a very exciting map, but if you just want like a generic dungeon, if you want a long dungeon, a lot of times I'll find myself just walking some of this down and then going in and, you know, like I'll just, you know, run rivers through things, or I don't have a mouse, so it's going to be entertaining. you know, just adorning things, like putting some like nice sketchy lines on the wall or whatever. But it speeds it up again, which, especially if you're working your first project, trying to figure out who you are as a game maker, if you can get it done faster, it's better. Because honestly, a lot of times, like 98% of the time, your first project is going to be crap. But you're going to, your second project, if you really keep going, probably, you know, it could be wonderful. If you're paying attention to why your first project is crap. The other good thing is that the sprites in VS have a lower level of detail. So yes, my main character. All right.
Can you see that okay? Everybody can see on the screen. Okay.
Since they're that chibi style, they're much easier to sprite. There are fewer colors involved. There's less shading. And some people really hate this style, but it's actually a lot easier to break into spriting wise. So if you wanted to try it, it's just a lot easier, it's a lot quicker. Let's see here. Okay, the bad parts about VX. The thing is that the materials have more precise specs. Like when I was talking before about XD sprites being able to be any size, VX has a default size. And it's very unforgiving that way. You have to be very specific how you specify. And like I said, the default chibi style isn't for everyone. And though the existing graphics and the character sets can be modified and replaced, they limit you to 5 tabs. So where XP has an unlimited number of different tile sets, if you're using VX, you're going to have to be clever about it. So that's one thing. If you want to have a lot of different assets, VX won't let you do it. Though you could potentially script yourself to utility, but I suppose if you're scripting yourself to utility, you might not be here. Though, if you are, I think you're wonderful. Okay, let's see. The version is targeted towards more casual users, like more casual game developers. So that can be a bit off-putting. People have been doing it for a while, like the quick event creation, that sort of thing. Another good thing about VX, though, actually, is Entebrain. They're the Japanese publisher that puts out RPG Maker. They have a blog, tkool. Yeah, tkool. Yeah, tkool.jp is the address. And they do updates, and they actually periodically release new graphic packs for the game. And you can have an unlimited number of character sprites. So maps are limited, but character sprites, you can have as many as you want. So they'll put out sets of, one that they did was a bunch of school children. They did different outfits for school sims. They did a bunch of new animals, stuff like that. And they all are able to be used in commercial projects. And actually, they just put out in Japan a huge graphics pack with big sets, monster battlers, music, everything. And it's available for about $30 in Japan, which is a conversion from yen. And it can be bought at Amazon.jp, but I haven't bought the pack yet. So I'm not sure it's compatible with the US version of RMDX, because it just came out. So anyway, that's RPG Maker. Super famous, but it's had a facelift. A lot of people didn't know about it, so that I talked to. And then the last major platform I'm talking about is GameMaker, and they're up to GameMaker 8. Let's see here. The language that GameMaker uses is called, using the free version right now because I'm not developing anything at the moment. The language that GameMaker uses is called GML. Game Maker language. The light version is free. The pro version is currently $25. It's gone up and down in price. I just checked the price 2 days ago. It was $25 then. The difference between the light and the pro version, so what your $25 buys you, is in the free version, the Game Maker logo pops up when you're running a game. And the pro version gets rid of that. And when you're using the program in developer mode, regular pop-ups show up, you know, register me, they get rid of that. In the pro version, you can use rotated, color blended, translucent sprites. You can create splash scenes with movies, images, web page, text. They've got a good particle system. You can do explosions, fireworks, flames, rain, advanced drawing functions. You can create 3D games. I don't have any experience with that. I've fallen in the community. Some people are a little underwhelmed about its 3D possibilities, but I really don't know too much about that. They do advertise that you can create 3D games. And they have multiplayer functions, so you can do that with a huge draw. And there are more than that, though, and I know that Chris will be doing a talk on a project he made in Game Maker after me, so I'm sure he'll go into more detail on a lot of that. So from my point of view, the pros for using Game Maker is that there's a great online community to use the program. Like, they're very active, very large communities. It's very easy to make arcade action-style games, especially. They have competent physics handling that's really easy to use. It supports mouse by default, which RenPy does as well. RPG Maker does support mouse input. You end up playing with a gamepad or keyboard. Fred mentioned that. And you can, the neatest thing, this is actually why I'm really interested in Game Maker, is you can make virtually any 2D game, any genre thinkable, even hybrids. It's very easy to shift between like a strategy game, real-time strategy, roguelike. And I've been kind of thinking about mixing genres a little bit. And the tutorial here is really good. I've done it before. I have Game Maker on my desktop too. But it takes you step by step through making like this basic arcade game with blowing up fruit, and it's very exciting. Well, you're supposed to catch fruit along for you, but it's nice. And a nice thing about the community being so large, a lot of people have made add-ons for, which are essentially Game Maker projects. This is just one that I downloaded, which is the Golden Realm RPG engine, because I'm really interested in RPGs and primarily in visual novels. ASC, the Light Edition, by the laptop. This is just, and you start with a pretty much a blank slate in Game Maker. There's no sample project. So yeah, this is basically a sample project. They include where they've added, you know, light bar, walking around. And this is a pretty basic one. They made this to be really editable, but the graphics are just kind of throwaway graphics that somebody's blocking or they give you an idea. It supports things like, you can walk that in a minute. Alright, and like reading signs and. Okay. Well, anyway. And you can do combat and stuff like that, but. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of those add-ons out there. So the community's so large, they're really, really cheap. So it's very easy to get somebody to make a framework for you for Game Maker, basically. The con is that a large of what makes it so user-friendly is the drag and drop interface that they have here. They like for you. Okay. Okay, I'll create a room. Again, I'm not working in Game Maker very often. Actually, Chris will probably show you this. So. And I think I used this line. Yeah, okay. So actually, I'm gonna go past that. But the drag and drop, it's really actually easy to use if you're immersed in it. But it can't do everything, and a lot of advanced functions require the scripting. GML is pretty easy to learn, but it can take a while to really fully understand it. And it's only used for Game Maker, so it's proprietary, and once you've learned it, you can do anything you want in Game Maker. People out there are Game Maker gurus. But it, you know, it's not C, it's not Python, it's not Ruby. So there's that issue. And there are very few graphical resources included in Davos, and they're pretty basic. So that's those are my views of it, but I am looking forward to using it in the future. So I've shown you a few things. There are a whole bunch more tools out there. It's really easy to do a search, find other ones, play around with them. But they're getting very easy to use. I've heard good things about Unity, haven't used it. That's another really good tool. Another one that I have played with a little is the XNA Game Studio, which uses C# for its scripting. Right now they have a thing through the Xbox Creators Club where you can program for PC or Xbox, and they'll distribute it instantly, and they'll bend it for you, work out distribution deal for you, which is pretty neat. Problem with that one is it's difficult to learn. You have to know C#. But if you have a friend, sometimes that can work. And the Creators Club membership, to actually sell your games, you have to pay for a subscription. And it's like $49 every 4 months or $99 for a year. So if your game's selling, it's a really good deal, but it can be kind of tough to otherwise. So. Okay. Well, I covered that. And I think, though, and these are the tools, but the tools are only as good as the person that uses them. So there are a number of things that you should do. These are just a few things that I've discovered, just kind of thinking about what worked for me and what didn't, as a creator in general. Gandhi says, be the change you want to see in the world. That's a famous quote by him. So I try to make the games I want to see in the world. So you have to be honest with yourself. You have to be able to look at the games you play and really think what made that game good. You know, beyond the eye candy, beyond the bells and whistles. Why did I play it? Why did I call into work for this game? You have to ask yourself this. It pleases you to have your name on it, but like any work of art, like any creation, that can blind you to the reality of what your game is. Just because you made it does not make it a good game. And if you're going to put all of that time into a game, it should be something that someone else wants to play. Because I think games are really a dialogue between the creator and the player. It's not really a game without a player. Another quote is, with great power comes great responsibility. Spider-Man. So you have the tools, you need to really utilize them. Don't just think of how they were intended to be used. I mean, you guys are hackers or interested in hacking, so you understand. So you need to meditate on what you have available. Think, how can I apply this in a novel way? Do this for the ability of your engine, do this for the features of your game, and do this in how you relate to people as a game developer. Another quote that's really helpful is from Picasso, which is, if you have 5 elements available, use only 4. If you have 4 elements, use 3. Which I would take to mean, you need to understand your limitations. It's important to stretch with your learning, but when you're actually putting your product out, you need to utilize what you've mastered, and not a stitch more. So, one thing I see a lot with people's projects, when they're having a hard time really getting into the flow, really developing a good game, is they're not utilizing their resources properly. There are a number of untapped resources that are really easy to overlook. Everybody focuses on the engine, on the coding, on the tech. But the people you know are really important, not just gamers. Like, listen to the people you know, like listen to other works of art, you know, be inspired, be open to new ideas where you need success. That's really important. If you love games, chances are you are a gamer. You love video games. I should say, if you're looking to develop games, because it really requires a strong love of your, I think, with video games, you really want to design one. So you clearly play games. Think about your favorite ones. You know, again, the ones that made you call into work. You need to think about what distinguished them from the rest. Why were they good? What specific mechanics did they use? Especially the ones you're able to emulate without a big budget or a big team. like those little things, what kept you playing for hours?
So you kind of begin to this introspective psychology of gaming. What'll be fun and addictive? Like, I had a great time. Not that WoW is an indie game at all, it's not, it's like the opposite. But it's a game that I, like half the world, got addicted to. And it was kind of fun to analyze the loot system, like the risk versus reward system, and kind of compare it with other risk versus reward, other MMOs, and see kind of the rhythms that emerge. Like, that kind of thing can be especially good for balancing games, which is really important. This is a big one. One thing that people don't really utilize a lot of times is other people. Your social skills, your people management skills. One of the things that can make you a great game developer, it's been a long day, is if you can manage a team. And that'll be one of the best skills you can have, because being able to manage other people, being able to select people, help you work with projects and work with them and communicate with them is an amazing resource. It's really limitless. Another thing that people don't think about a lot, they're thinking about specs, is dialogue within the game, writing skills. It's not just a matter of talent. You know, writing dialogue and story is a tool that's free. Once you really hone your skills, it's free, you use it everywhere, and it's incredibly powerful, regardless of what sort of game you want to make. Even the big 3D releases from Bethesda, you know, your Dragon Ages, and that's not like Bioware, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, they're really dependent on dialogue these days, and gamers are used to that. You know, there's very little of the old, you know, one-liner in English type of thing. So, and it's useful in other fields. So a few things that you can do to help you with that are obviously playing indie games. But you'd be surprised how many people haven't played any indie games that are trying to make indie games. It's important to support the industry, of course. That goes without saying. But you'll also learn volumes about clever ways to do things. Like, you'll see workarounds and actions. And you'll see it without the resources or the budget of the larger house. And it's really fun. I mean, you know. And, yeah, it's an excuse thing. Get away from me. I'm working. The next thing, I think this is really super important, is that you need to continue to improve your skills. Skills related to game making. All of those things I just talked about. Not just your coding. Even things you aren't good at, that you have no hope of ever being in charge of on your own project. You know, say you can't draw at all. You should take classes. Adult Ed is really good. They're very cheap. Or you can take join forums online and study that way. But drawing classes, basic music background, you know, just a simple music theory class, writing classes, all of those things. Because even if you aren't going to be the one executing that part of the project, you know, you're not going to write the music, you're not going to write the dialogue, you have a great friend that does one or both of those things. If it's your project, you need to know enough about the quality if it's going to have your name on it. So you need to be able to accurately assess that and select someone who can do that for you. So I have a few minutes left. Each of the engines I showed you today actually have commercial games out by smaller companies, which I just have them here. And they're very much geared towards the kind of 8-bit nostalgia, 16-bit nostalgia. I guess I have that now. It's kind of cheap. Casual gaming market. That's kind of my niche. So let's see. Renko was the first one I talked about. This is Bionic Heart. My type of games. They do a lot in the flower shop, a lot of sim games. This is great. This game is great for fully voice acting. Oh, Red Pine can play sound files, so pretty easy to put voice acting in. This is just a game. So you can kind of see Red Pine in action a little bit here. And this is basically a visual novel. This one is pretty, I talk all about good dialogue and not skipping it. But you can see, like, they move the screens. And then there's a character. This one's fully voice acted. She basically, in this one, she's pressuring you to get married. She wants to know, you know, why are you going to marry me? So you either have to take your time or say, hey, why don't we live together instead to dodge the bullet. She reacts. So, yeah, the possibilities are kind of limitless. They do it a lot for dating sims because it's kind of established genre, but there's a lot of different things you can do. They actually have Vera Blanc out right now, which is a detective series, film noir, and you do like mysteries. And actually, if you've ever played Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, for they have on PS and Wii, really easy to do that kind of thing in Renpy. Especially if you know somebody that can script a little bit for you, or you can learn Python, which is really easy to learn. So it was Renpy, and then, RPG Maker, XP, this is Avion. Avion is huge right now. They're all over. I have it on my desktop. I just have the free trials on here because I didn't want to buy it again. But. Yeah, Amaranth does, they've done Grimm's Hatchery, they've done Avion series and stuff. So this is Avion. Skip intro. Yeah, so. Oh, it's making me say something. How condescending. Okay. So yeah, this is just to give you an idea. You saw kind of when I was in XP editor mode. This is how a nice map looks. That's the character and everything, and you can get the battles and fight and everything. This game is right now on Shockwave along with 4 or 5 other sequels. So they're getting really wide distribution right now. They're making a lot of money off that factory. They have a big web presence. For VX, this is Eternal Eden by Blossomsoft. He's actually French-Canadian, I believe. Comes through a little in his translation. But he right now, they just put out a sequel. This game is actually a story about kind of a. I think I did start the tutorial. This is the problem trying to talk to you guys and actually run this at the same time. I need an assistant. They go. It's a story about some kids that end up eating the fruit of this tower and it throws the world into dystopian chaos. It's actually a really good game. They got the balance right. A lot of the mechanics are really cool. They use the engine well. You can see the character portraits and the particle effects. So this is all very easy to do. But it looks pretty good. Very solid. They skipped the part where I learned to do stuff. Well, anyway. And then this is the last of this is about as much time as I have. It's actually working out rather well, right, Justin? It's Game Maker. And there are a number of different games. This is a game called Cube Night. Very girly. It's actually kind of a version of, I don't know how many people are familiar with Princess Maker, the Korean game. It made a ton of money over there, and there's been a lot of translations here, but it never actually made it here. So what they did, the studio, is they basically made kind of a Princess Maker-esque spin-off for the U.S. and made a ton of money doing it. And it's just like a life sim where girl, and you're trying to find her fortune. Actually, a little girly for me, even, but apparently it's made a lot of money with those things. So yeah, there are a lot of, these are just a few. I have dozens of indie games on my desktop made in these engines. There are a lot of arcade games made on GameMaker 2 out there right now. I think actually Chris's Bumiji, is kind of an arcade style game. So you'll see a lot more of that, but I wanted to cover kind of the casual thing, show you some options. It's really good, especially if you're just kind of cutting your teeth and getting used to game development, try something that's pretty easy. But yeah, game making is really easy to break into. It's really fun to discover what kind of game maker you are and where your talents lie. So anyway, I'm Paige McKay. I'll be at the con all weekend, and if you have any questions at all for me about game making, I will do my darndest. I've been mucking about for a while now, and I feel like I have no time to tell you all the things I want to tell you. But thank you very much.